This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Town of Merivale is bracing for more change. They've made some changes over the decades, of course, not necessarily for the best, but they're dealing with it. And some of the members of the town council who have been doing their part to make sure that the town moves in the right direction is our guest this morning. Leonard White is a town councilman with Town of Merivale. And Merivale, Councilman White, thank you for joining us on Lakeshore Public Radio.
Oh, thank you, Chris. I really appreciate it that you have given me the opportunity to speak to your listening audience. First, I'd like to tell you a little bit about myself here. Again, my name is Leonard White. I'm Ward 7 councilman. I ran for council because I wanted to see my area, particularly in my area, to see it, you know, grow a little bit more because it was going at a slower rate than other parts of Merivale. At the same time, we're all Merivale here, and the council has worked together, actually, to push these ready or shovel-ready type projects, specifically like the new Domino's store, mm-hmm. or should I say the warehouse. They invested $50.3 million, and what they're planning on doing with that, Nick, is that they're planning on having that done by the end of 2022. It's a pretty good investment for Merivale, mm-hmm. along with other investments on that end, but I'll get back to why I ran for council here. One of the reasons, again, I ran for council is because I just seen a need to have the channel change, and I didn't see it changing quick enough. There's some abandoned properties on my end of town here that we're working on, and we just need all of Merivale to prosper. Mm-hmm. And that's another reason why I got there. This actually is my second run for this office. I ran back in 2015, and I came up shy 4 points. This time I did a lot better. Had a race in May with the incumbent, and then I had an additional race in the general. We made it.
And what area?
Now I'm busy at work here. It's a lot to do, but I'm a public servant. I've been a public servant for a very long time.
What area of
what I like to do,
Mr. White? Tell us what area of Merivale is in your district, your ward, that I should say.
Yes, my ward is primarily 57th Avenue between Broadway and Taft Street. We go all the way down to the areas of Menards, pretty much closer to the railroad tracks.
Right.
We have Ellendale, we have Englehart, we have Devonshire Woods, we also have Crown Heights as well, and Brookstone. So we got a pretty significant area, but that's the oldest part of town, and we need to, you know, just get that going like the rest of the town.
I understand, yeah. When you talk about this, the sections of the town that you represent and other council members too, and now that you have the opportunity to work with the American Rescue Plan funding that's being made available for the town of Merivale, what projects are you and your other council members looking at to be able to take advantage of this funding while it's available?
Well, we're still doing a lot of talking about what we want to spend the money on. I know we actually broke it down in the categories of public health. We want to spend $650,000 on public health. Additionally, we want to spend $400,000 on negative economic impact. An additional $3 million in infrastructure. When we talk about infrastructure, it's just not like streets, curbs, and sidewalks of that nature. We're also talking about homes that may be able to benefit from that. We're also talking about revenue that we lost, of $1 million in left revenue that some of the businesses lost. And we're trying to help them pull through. So we need to keep those businesses level as well, because that pandemic situation still, which is still going on, mm-hmm. Has dragged down the whole economy here. But the American Rescue Plan is going to help us out a lot. And additionally, again, and then on the administrative side, we put aside $100,000 for that. So our total fund for American Rescue Plan is $5.5 million. But I'd like to go back just to the public health portion.
Okay.
Even at the town hall, we took some great steps there. We have equipment that actually deal with the coronavirus through the air system there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it tags those viruses once it gets through that. So. Those are the many things that we got on the plate right now, and we're ready to move with this. Probably coming up this week, Nick, we're going to finalize a lot of these things in American Rescue.
Mm-hmm, I see. When it comes to you and the rest of the county town council going over these areas, and this is probably true for any community in Lake County, but you're taking a look at not only trying to take advantage of the funds to rehabilitate and to revive neighborhoods and business areas because they've been hit hard by the pandemic. One of the other areas, which I know has been under constant review, I'm sure, by some, but certainly I'm sure regular review by the town council, some of the business areas that are sitting available. And in this place, I'm talking in particular about what it used to be the Star Plaza Theater and the hotel area there at Highway 30 and I-65. What kind of talk has been lately, if it's ongoing, that'd be great, that is being planned, or at least to find somebody who would like to take over that whole section of the intersection and turn it into something?
Sure, and I appreciate you asking that question, Nick. What we try to do is that when we have council members that's at their ward, we kind of let them have the lead on saying how they want to proceed with those projects, specifically in the old Radisson Hotel, Star Plaza area.
Right.
I haven't seen anything came up on the radar yet for that, but I'm watching that as well because of the prime piece of property. Secondly, the old Burlington Coal Factory has been looked at as a potential convention center. So we haven't got there just quite yet, but we're looking at close to the end of this year having a better view of how we might be able to get that started.
We're talking with Maryville Town Councilman Leonard White about his job and about what the work in the town council is doing to help revive sections of the community that need the help. And some new businesses are interested in coming into Maryville. And in particular, we start out of the conversation talking a little bit about them. But if you will, tell us more about the great news that came out with the groundbreaking recently for a Domino's dough-making factory. But I guess it's more than just a factory that's going to make dough for the Domino's pizza restaurants. It's going to be a big warehouse as well. Well, too.
Yes, we had discussed with the chief executive officer that he wanted to make that a production and a warehouse center in Maryville.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what that'll do, Nick, is that according to the CEO, going to produce many construction, union construction jobs, as well as at the end of that construction, produce an additional 140 jobs. On a continuous basis.
One of the other areas I know, too, that has gotten some attention lately is what Amazon wants to do. They've been very active here in Northwest Indiana, in particular, building up its network of storage areas, distribution centers, and the like. What are the plans that that Amazon has for Maryville? What would they like to put in?
Well, actually, Amazon's up and running right now,
uh-huh.
and we appreciate it. If you go down there to the Maryplex area, you'll definitely see Amazon vehicles in and out of there. Even if you're at the stoplight on US 30 and Broadway, you'll constantly see Amazon vehicles going. And I think that's a great thing for that part of Maryville as well. It's prime location. They always say location, location. But that is a prime location for those type of businesses, and we hope that that we're going to get some more similar type business. According to who's kind of our economic guy, our town manager Pat Reardon, he says there's at least another $250 million projects in the hopper right now. So we're looking forward to doing those things, and come on, come on. Of course, when the governor was there, he was very happy, Governor Holcomb. He was very happy that, you know, Maryville is moving in the direction that it's moving. He says he loves Maryville. He loves Lake County. Those were his exact words. And we love him back.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that as a representative of the town of Merrillville on the council, do you feel that things are looking up as far as making the community a more diverse neighborhood? We know, of course, about the history of Merrillville. It basically came out of residents who wanted to move south from Gary, and things kind of grew from that over the decades. Do you think that that's kind of going to be a area that you're going to have to look at in more detail, or at least it's on the way to becoming a more diverse community?
Well, the community is absolutely diverse. I think it has to be reflected in the political makeup of Merrillville, the diversity as well. I, for one, would love to see Merrillville become a city because I think that to properly represent us, all of us, we all need to support someone that looks out for the entire community at one time. I think pretty much all councilmen do pretty decently in terms of their areas, but we need a central way to govern this community in terms of diversity. I think that, you know, you can look at the numbers. I think the last number showed an increase of approximately 3,000 more individuals that was added to our population. Yeah, I actually remember, Nick, during the period of time that, you know, the flight from Gary, Indiana, and some of the other surrounding communities because of, you know, the resistance to diversity led to the town of Merrillville being built. Now Merrillville is probably one of the most diverse towns in the state of Indiana.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. White, thank you for spending time with us. Your views about how the town of Merrillville is doing, how it's growing over the decades and coming up to what would be 2022. And we hope to have you back on Regionally Speaking to talk again soon. Thank you very much for being with us today.
And thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about Merrillville. And in the near future, I'd be glad to talk additionally more.
You're welcome. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Corey Shepherd is a native of Northwest Indiana. He is a commentator, takes a look at things happening in his town of Gary. And one of his latest commentaries talks about how some issues involving historic preservation may have slipped through the fingers of some of the administrators of the city in the years past. And let's find out more. Corey, thanks for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
Happy to be here.
And you talk about in your latest commentary, talking about the disappointment that you've had, or at least maybe you say you've gone beyond disappointment, on how city officials have seemed to ignore historic structures. Will you tell us a little bit about some of your disappointments, and in particular, some of the vintage properties that have not been taken care of?
Certainly. Gary, Indiana has a number of historic structures that have not been taken care of since they closed in the early 70s. An example of which would be the Palace Theater, which stands on the corner of 8th and Broadway. It is a beautiful theater, or at least it once was, and it has suffered neglect ever since it closed its doors in the 1970s. And it has not been taken care of. There has been no effort by the city of Gary or any entity to keep it up. That building is a historic structure. Lots of movies and plays were shown there. And it could be potential to revitalize that place in the effort to make downtown a vibrant area again in the city. And there just have been no inspiration, no imagination by previous mayoral administration. I don't blame one or another. It's just a blanket, systematic neglect happening at the Palace Theater and with City Methodist Church and the old post office. On 6th of Massachusetts, these are all structures that have the potential tourist attractions, museum pieces, if you will. And the city of Gary just has not made any effort to preserve these structures for any generation.
What do you feel that they should have done, at least if a building had to be closed up, to at least keep it from being so dilapidated, from having to actually have to be forced to be demolished because it gone into such disrepair?
That's correct. No roofing preservation has been done, foundation work, or anything on the basic level just to keep these buildings habitable. Nothing was done. And as a result, these structures have been left to the mercy of the elements. They've rotted and decayed, and portions of the building have fallen into themselves. And we recently lost the remaining facade of Memorial Auditorium. which was severely damaged in a fire in 1997. And, you know, there are just no concerted effort by the city at all to, you know, bring these buildings up to code, bring them up to par, so whether at least they could be mothballed for, you know, any kind of economic development.
Do you think these are buildings and properties in general that maybe that the Gary Redevelopment Commission should probably have taken on, at least supervised at some point of a fix up, or maybe at least preserve them so that they might be worked on in the future? And if so, what seems to be the problem that you feel is there with the Gary Redevelopment Commission?
The Gary Redevelopment Commission's focus is to bring back downtown Gary. And I just personally believe that it's over as far as bringing back downtown Gary. There's nothing there. The structures that currently sit there are dilapidated and rotting. They have torn down a number of structures on Broadway, but it remains to be seen what it's going to take the place of those structures that have been demolished. As far as, let's take City Methodist Church, for example, they want to turn it into a ruins garden, and I just don't like that. It's not going to bring any kind of revenue to the city as far as economics. Right now, that building has been used in a number of movies, and you have a lot of so-called urban explorers that come through and take pictures and video kind of structure, but none of that is helping revitalize the downtown area on any major scale. So I struggle to understand what the Redevelopment Commission wants to do with downtown Gary.
Mm-hmm.
There are plans that are available if you know where to look, but it doesn't seem like the Redevelopment Committee is taking any of those plans or studies seriously. They move very slowly. And I just don't understand what it is they want to do and how they're going to accomplish this goal of revitalizing Gary's downtown district.
I know in one of your recent commentaries, you go into more detail about some of these structures in Gary that have been left abandoned, literally to rot. And how they've not been well preserved, to be sure. And you talk about the Gary Redevelopment Commission, and you also talk about this organization which was in the news a few years ago but seems to have disappeared from the news, and that's this public-private partnership agreement that was made with a corporation named MayaCo. Can you tell us at least what you feel is about this and why you think that MayaCo probably should have gotten involved more, if not at all, in preserving some of these buildings in downtown and the rest of the city of Gary?
MayaCo is a mysterious entity whose goals are vague, and we don't know what they want to do with any of the properties that they are involved in. MayaCo, as you know, was a partnership between the city of Gary and the former mayor of the city of Chicago, Reggie Bailey. He was out here taking photo ops with Gary's mayor at the time, Karen Freeman Wilson, and the existence of MayaCo created sort of an uproar in the city. And most of it is because we don't know what they want to do. None of their plans are public, or very few of their operations are made public. We really don't know who's actually involved with the business as far as downtown Gary is concerned, especially with historic preservation. We don't know if MayaCo has any plans to restore or revitalize any historic structure that remains standing in downtown Gary. It's just a whole lot of we don't know going on.
Mm-hmm.
As I said before, I struggle to understand what is happening with downtown Gary as far as MayaCo or as far as the Redevelopment Commission or their role in reducing the amount of local entrepreneurial development. There was a restaurant that wanted to open up downtown, and they pushed that restaurant out. And the building that restaurant was supposed to be occupied was demolished, as well as all of the buildings on the rest of the block. And what's going to go there? We don't know what's happening. We don't know if there are any developmental entities trying to buy any property downtown. Is downtown Gary's property valuable? You know, like we just don't have the answers any of those questions.
Yeah. Now, I know that there has been, at least a few years ago, there was a very active and very present Historical Preservation Society in the city of Gary. What are your thoughts about that? Have things just completely disappeared over the last few years, looking into being able to preserve historic buildings like that?
I'm not sure if they've entirely disappeared as far as being an entity, but they have disappeared as far as being active. They're not doing anything, really, and I'm not trying to, you know, vilify them, because I have a love for Dolly Minder. She was one of Gary's premier historians, and she founded the Gary Historical Society. They pride themselves on Gary's history, and I'm not really sure the extent of their attempts to preserve Gary's structures in the past before I started writing. But they're definitely not active now. Their website says that they are fundraising, or they had a fundraiser, but I'm not really sure if they're still active right now at this moment, if they're still trying to fundraise at this moment. It's just a sad situation in the city as far as its historical history, and I just don't want our structures or whatever is left to be demolished.
Corey, do you think that this is an opportunity for citizens, people who live in the neighborhoods where some of these structures are still up, should take this matter of maybe some type of historic preservation onto their own hands?
I would think an effort such as that will be needed in the city. As I stated in my column, I'm not really sure how much of an effort IR neighborhoods could be enough to bring the resources they need to be able to try to mothball some of these buildings or even come up with new structures to replace these buildings if any event they are demolished. And, you know, I just want people to be aware that, you know, there are people out here that care about these buildings and want to see something done, but we don't have the resources, we don't have the political power. Maybe coming together as far as communities is concerned, doing things on an independent level might help. I'm not really sure if that could be the case with the city of Gary and whatever plans that they want to do. They seem to not want the citizens of Gary to be involved at all, or have a say-so at all in what goes on as far as historic preservation or as far as what kind of economic opportunities could be available inside of these individual neighborhoods. So there's still a lot to talk about. There's still a lot of work to be done, a lot of research to be made, and a lot of accountability that needs to be had with our leadership involving Gary's historical structures and their economic prospects.
Corey Shepherd is an amateur historian. He's a Gary resident and a native, nearly a native. He's lived here almost all his life, and he's concerned about some of these things that are happening as he sees them in the city of Gary and puts out some commentary from time to time, and we've been finding out what his latest views are on things, in this particular case about historic preservation in the city of Gary. And Corey, thank you for being with us. We appreciate your efforts to tell us all about it, and we hope to have you back on the show again soon.
Thank you for your time, Chris.
This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Off my coast, Michael Puente recently spoke with a Valparaiso community activist about the controversy over a 9/11 parade float in Valparaiso a few weeks ago, as well as more issues of potential bias happening in that city. Here's the conversation.
Last Saturday was the 20th anniversary of the September 11th terrorist attack. While there was tributes to mark the day all over the country, one tribute got a lot of people here talking. The Valparaiso Republican Party sponsored a float in Valpo's Popcorn Festival parade. The float depicted the two twin towers with gaping holes in each of them. Valpo Republicans defend the float, with so many calling it tasteless and insensitive. Kat Peters is a resident of Valparaiso and is part of a group called Allies Against Racism. She's here to talk about the float and the controversy and other things. Welcome to Off Mic, Kat.
Thanks for having me.
So, Kat, did you go to the Popcorn Festival parade?
Yes, I was there with my family.
And before we get into everything, how was it to actually, because I'm sure the parade was probably canceled last year because of COVID. How did you feel going back out there this year?
Yeah, it was, you know, of course, a little bit. I was wondering if I should go. just because of, you know, going into a big crowd of people and thinking about COVID. But I have two small kids, and of course, they love getting all the candy at the parade. So we thought it'd be fun and just see what, you know, what the different floats were and what the different community organizations were sharing in the parade.
Okay, so I didn't go to the parade, but, you know, on that day, I was somewhere else, and somebody sent me a picture of the float, and they're like, oh, my God, can you believe this? While you were sitting there in Valparaiso looking at the Popcorn Festival parade, and that float came around, what was your initial thought?
Right, well, you know, I was sitting there with my kids on the side of the road, and I saw the float go by. And I just had kind of a visceral reaction to seeing the towers on the float. And I think I was on a side of the float, perhaps, where I couldn't see the holes in the side, but I could see smoke coming out. And it, you know, it kind of brought back this trauma feeling of, you know, that day 20 years ago. I was a high school student then. And I, you know, it just felt kind of icky, you know. And then later in the day, I saw more photos of the other side of the float with the holes, and it just kind of made my stomach drop.
Right. What was the reaction of the float as it was going by you? Were people like clapping? To me, it just looked, how would anybody put that together on the 20th anniversary and a Republican organization at that? And think that was okay.
Right. That was my feeling when it went by. You know, I think there were mixed reactions. There were all of the people in the actual float and the people walking with it were sort of clapping loudly and encouraging people to stand on their feet and clap. And so some people were doing that, and other people around me were sort of shocked or silent. That was sort of how I felt. I just sat there wondering what was going on and didn't feel really, you know, like clapping or even looking at the float.
Right. And so there's been a lot of discussion on that video of the float has really gotten a lot of attention nationwide, actually. And
wow, yeah.
What have people in Valparaiso been thinking about it? Because I obviously on Facebook pages, people are defending it. Some people are criticizing it. What are the regular folks in Valpo talking?
Yeah. There's a lot of, you know, on social media and also just with people that I know, sort of, yeah, shock and disappointment that this would be the representation of our town in the media. I think a lot of us, you know, unfortunately are realizing that this is the representation of our town that's being put out there. And I think there's just a lot of disappointment even in the prize committee that gave this float an honorable mention, which I think has made a lot of us wonder or be concerned about just the leadership in our town.
You know, in a conversation we had prior to this interview, we were talking a little bit about, you know, usually one of the things that Valparaiso is known for, you know, it's being a very progressive town and has a human relations commission to deal with some of these things. Do you know if they have any plans to talk about this?
You know, I'm not sure. I know that the Human Relations Council is planning to have a meeting later this month. However, unfortunately, the Human Relations Council here in Valparaiso hasn't been meeting regularly. If you go to their page on the Valpo City website, it says that they meet monthly. I believe it's the fourth Tuesday of every month, but they have not been meeting regularly since March of this year. They have had numerous meetings called and then canceled. I believe after March, the only other meeting they've had has been in July. And this has sort of come on the heels of some contentious conversations having to do with racism in the schools that kind of culminated in the March 2021 meeting. And ever since then, the Human Relations Council hasn't been meeting.
And you think they should be meeting regularly to talk about things like this?
That's right. You know, the Human Relations Council's purpose is to, you know, they have four purposes laid out in their resolution or their, you know, that started them. It's on the city website. And one of them is advising the mayor on the status of human relations in the city and identifying special needs or opportunities to enhance such relations. You know, and it has three other purposes that have to do with helping in racially or ethnically motivated incidents or promoting better understanding with minorities and serving as a liaison between the mayor's office and minority groups. And, you know, it's a special entity created to do those things, and it's just not functioning.
Yeah. You know, real quick, before we get a little bit further in this conversation, I do want to read what Michael Simpson, chairman of the Porter County GOP, sponsored of the float in the Popcorn Festival that drew a lot of attention and criticism, what he posted on Facebook. He says, our Popcorn Festival float was inspired by the courage and sacrifice of those we lost on September 11, 2001, and recently in Kabul, Afghanistan. We felt it important considering the parade coincided with the 20th anniversary of that horrible day, and that Indiana welcomed home one of the Afghan fallen the next day, to dedicate our float not to politics and to candidates, but to the innocent civilians, first responders, and brave military who perished and whose memories we'll never forget. We wish no disrespect and regret that our tribute to the lives lost and those who continue to serve was to some perceived in bad taste. So, I mean, at least they're acknowledging it. And although on the Facebook page, a lot of people are like, well, you shouldn't have to apologize and, you know, don't give in to liberals. I mean, honestly, if it was a sincere apology, and maybe it is, I haven't had a chance to talk to Michael Simpson, he probably would have taken those comments down. But, you know, who knows?
Right.
But, I mean, there's no question it was in bad taste.
Right.
So... tell me a little bit about your group that you belong to, Allies Against Racism. How long have you been around, and what are some of the issues you've been tackling?
Yeah, Allies Against Racism has existed for, you know, more than 5 years. I've been a part of it for about the past year or so. You know, they started out as a group of concerned citizens just working on issues of racism, you know, for a number of years. And then starting about a year ago, we've kind of focused our efforts to learn more and respond more to issues going on, especially in the Valparaiso Community Schools. And this is, you know, related to the Human Relations Council, because in August of last year, August 2020, the Human Relations Council had a special meeting in order to hear perspectives regarding the hiring of the new superintendent of schools. And a number of students there presented information about racial bullying in the schools. And so, you know, our group and the Human Relations Council were both kind of working to address this, especially related to protecting, you know, students of color in our community.
And what have been some of the issues that you've been troubled by in Valparaiso that perhaps it needs more addressing?
Right. So, you know, the students at that particular meeting discussed being at school and hearing someone say in the Pledge of Allegiance that, you know, everyone is what, let's see if I can find the exact quote, but let's see. Someone said, liberty and justice for all except Black people. And this comment in the school by a fellow classmate who said this to a Black classmate was never dealt with at the school. Or other students that were being called the N-word in the classroom were never, you know, that incident and issue was never dealt with as a bullying incident at the school. But just even most recently, a business owner in Valparaiso reported hearing another local business owner who was at her restaurant using the N-word, referring to her employees and saying that he didn't want any more N-word people in his town. And just last Tuesday also, there was a rally in front of the courthouse in Valparaiso, and a, and a Brazilian resident of town was told to go back to their country. So, you know, there have been numerous incidents that are causing people of color, especially in Valparaiso, to feel, you know, very afraid and hurt. Another incident was, you know, for September 11th, the high school football team held a Patriot Night, and they had special T-shirts printed with the Gadsden flag symbol printed on the sleeve. And this also has caused people of color to feel afraid and hurt, given the use of the Gadsden flag by white supremacists.
What is that? For people who are unfamiliar, what is the Gadsden flag?
Yeah, the Gadsden flag is the yellow flag with the snake on it that says, "Don't tread on me," which, you know, historically was not necessarily a symbol of hate groups, but has recently been used by white supremacist groups in their rallies and their actions. It was also, you know, you can see video of Capitol police officers being beaten with the Gadsden flag at the January 6th insurrection. So the, you know, the current use of that symbol is not one that, you know, we would like, our town would like to be seeing on our high school football team's T-shirts.
So definitely you think there's a need for further conversation in Valparaiso these days around a lot of these issues.
Yeah. You know, I think unfortunately, like you mentioned about, you know, remembering September 11th, but this is a national sort of conversation, but all of these sort of polarized and politicized conversations that are happening all over the country are, of course, happening here in Valparaiso, having to do with party politics, with how we remember September 11th, how we think about the military, how we think about race. And we happen to have in Valparaiso a human relations council that is supposed to help us discuss these issues. And, you know, due to, I think, some of the same problems of politicization and polarization, it's not functioning. And so, you know, we want our community leaders, the city level, the schools, the churches, the universities, civic organizations, you know, to stand up against white supremacy and hatred, but also we want our community to be able to discuss these issues and move on and become better.
Kat Peters is with the is a resident of Valparaiso and is part of a group called Allies Against Racism. Kat, thank you so much for bringing some of these issues to us on Off Mic today.
That was Off Mic host Michael Puente, and you can find Off Mic here on Lakeshore Public Radio every Friday morning at 11 o'clock, on Lakeshore Public Radio at 89.1 FM, and online at lakeshorepublicradio.org. And that's it for Regionally Speaking for today and for this week. I'm Chris Nolte. Our thanks to our guests, and we will be back with you on Monday.